Listening Dog Media.
The Hot Mess Mum. The mum most likely to send her kids to school in regular clothes on non-school uniform day. The mum who forgets to sign the permission slip for school trips. The mum who has probably put leftovers in her kids' lunchbox on more than one occasion. But most importantly, the Hot Mess Mum is actually rocking it and is doing a far better job than even she thinks. Please welcome our Hot Mess Mums, telling it as it is, Kelly and Jenny Powell.
It is the Hot Mess Mums Club podcast. I'm Kelly Pegg.
And I'm Jenny Powell. And I'm on my best behaviour because with us today we have, I was quoted for saying she gets you out of hormone hell, and she does. She is the wonderful Anise Mukherjee, and I'm being very selfish here because I think she's a complete delight. She's helped a lot of women in their hormonal hells, and I said to Kelly, we have to have this beautiful woman on the show. She's beautiful inside and out, and she's helped so many people. End of. Thank you very much for listening. That's the end of Hot Mess Mum Club. So, Anise, just a quick rundown. I say hormone hell, and for me at 52, it's certainly something that crosses your mind at one time or another. And also, I think I was just completely confused, felt like I wasn't getting the correct information about anything, and that the subject itself is completely taboo. And do you think that we're recognizing hormones in general and what we do about them, also perimenopause and the menopause? Do you think we're recognizing it enough now? Because things have changed a bit.
Things are changing, definitely. Yeah, I think we're getting there. But I think it's not been talked about historically. It's just, as you say, completely taboo. And that's not just menopause, perimenopause. It's all sorts of hormone imbalances that women and men have problems with. And, you know, teenagers increasingly have problems with their hormones through puberty. And that, you know, one of the things I always say is that having, you know, both ends of the spectrum, having perimenopause and menopause and puberty in the same household isn't always easy. And I think it's just being recognised a lot more now. And I think actually social media is good because it's raising awareness. But there's a bit of a disconnect between, you know, I think women want to know more about it. Everyone wants to know more about hormones. But actually in conventional healthcare, my specialty is guilty as charged, actually, because endocrinologists, which is hormone specialists, you know, tend to steer clear of hormone imbalances. They tend to sort of look after people with hormone diseases, in particular things like diabetes, or if you've got hormone-driven tumours and things like that. So endocrinologists tend to do that. But now, increasingly, a lot of GPs and gynecologists are getting more involved with hormone imbalances and, in particular, menopause and perimenopause. So I think we're getting there. But, I mean, people come to me every day in clinic and they just have no idea what to do or what's going on. And I think that needs to change. I would say we're very reactive rather than proactive.
So
I think
absolutely.
To get the information out there for women before they get into hormone imbalance hell or whatever, you know, before they get there, prevent it.
Yeah.
Better than cure. So that's what I'd like. But I spend most of my time having to pull people, as you say, having got into a problem. So, you know, I'd like that to change.
And it is interesting and quite useful to our listeners because you have sort of already mentioned that it's like a house of hormones, isn't it? We don't just specify sort of like, oh, you're in your 50s. That's when it starts. That's when the trouble starts. It, you know, for every single member in my family, 19-year-old, 12-year-old, 52-year-old, and then, of course, you mentioned men as well. We've all got our issues and, you know, we're just not educated enough and, you know, it's not talked about. And it's interesting because most households are just full of hormones that everybody needs to be dealt with differently, don't they? And everybody needs to be sympathetic towards the fact that everyone's in their own little hormonal world.
Exactly. I mean, you're absolutely right. The way our hormones affect us is different for absolutely everybody. But there is one hormone, and it's been plaguing me this year in particular with all my patients, that messes up all the other hormones, and that's cortisol that comes from the adrenal glands, and that's the chronic stress hormone. And that has impacted a lot of people. I mean, cortisol, we're meant to have it just at times of severe stress, you know, and actually, unfortunately, this year's been severely stressful for everybody. So lots of people say they're gaining weight, they get bloating, that, you know, periods might have stopped, symptoms are worse, sleep is disrupted, and that's the cortisol messing up all the other hormones. And it's not a disease, mm-hmm. it's an imbalance. So it's really, really, you know, it's not, you can't just fix it with a pill. You've got to kind of understand, but understanding what's going on is helpful. And I think the problem in households, when you've got all these other hormones flying around, female hormones, male hormones, and then you get cortisol whipping them all down, it's difficult. I mean, I don't want to make it sound terrible, because I always talk about how I work in the wonderful world of hormones. And that's because if you understand it, you can make changes and do things to kind of help with those naughty hormones misbehaving, and it can be great. And I mean, I know sometimes when I talk about it, I think, oh, I'm making it too complicated and I'm making it sound scary, but it shouldn't be. I want everybody to understand it so that they can, you know, take control, really.
When you say take control, do you mean a lifestyle change to help that? Because I think for busy mums, obviously life can be really stressful. With COVID, it's obviously doubled, tripled, you know, it's so much sort of more than it would be in a normal world. Is it about sort of changing lifestyle to try and slow down, to not get stressed, to do things to relieve that?
I always talk about self-care, and that is very important. But we can't just all only look after ourselves when we've got everyone else in the household to consider. Yeah. So I always say it's about small tweaks. It's about being aware of what is happening and just making tiny changes wherever you can to relieve the stress. I think we all know that this year's been really stressful. And I think the stress has got to everybody in the whole of the country, you know, male, female, all ages, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's like with everybody's working from home, the stress causes weight gain, the fridge is right there, you know. I've heard people talk about the COVID stone, because loads of people have put a stone in weight on. And so, you know, you can't, the stress does have an impact on that, but you can also not fill your fridge up quite so full, be careful about what you put in it. So there's small little changes that you can make in several aspects. And the other thing that I know you are, Jenny, very big on is exercise, because that burns away at the stress. And when you've got kids, get them out in the fresh air.
Yeah.
Go and exercise with that, even if they're just, you're going for a walk.
You've worked with me for a while now, and you've really helped me with my perimenopausal state, and it's really helped in so many ways. But the one thing I wanted to ask you that I've never mentioned to you before was the fact that there's such a negativity around menopause or perimenopause, that everything and the way it affects you is negative. It's not, there's nothing good about it. You know, and I wake up every morning thinking, oh, and even if something goes wrong or I'm in a bad mood, I get blamed for everything because it's me, because I must be menopausal. And it's not necessarily true, because I think it's something now that should be celebrated in a way. If we can sort of balance everything out, it's a good thing. You know, I think more positive. I say what I think more, and I never used to do that. I used to just pretend, like, just say what I think people wanted to hear. And in a way, that's a positive thing. And there are so many positive things. And do you agree with that, that it's, that the negativity that surrounds it isn't necessarily right?
If I look at my life, because I went through menopause a few years ago, you know, I'm so much better and happier now than I was, you know, 10 or 15 years when the kids were very little and work was exhausting and the kids were exhausting and I couldn't even have the time. You don't have as much time. And actually, I know that, you know, you can always never have enough time, but I think there's so many things that can be positive if, you know, in menopause, there are so many positive factors. And actually, the other thing is, I look after women of all ages, and we talk about menopause and the hormone imbalance of perimenopause, but I see women today now more than 20, 30 years ago, because I've been in this game a long time. Younger women are struggling with hormones too, but we don't talk about that as much.
No.
It's all blamed on menopause and perimenopause. And actually, you take women 10 years younger and many have hormone imbalances.
Cue Kelly. Well, young.
And I think this can be more difficult to manage. I think in menopause, actually, the great thing is there's loads of research on hormone therapy. And we now know, you know, it's not all the same and it's not all safe, but that we know how to give it very, very safely now. And so in a way, the management of menopause is easier. In younger women, it's not so easy. You know, it's not quite the same because you've got hormones, but they're not balanced and frequently. So yeah, so Kelly, what's your story then?
Well, no, I was diagnosed with a bit of an issue with my thyroid, but I find it very general when you go to the GP, and I still don't understand it. And apparently it's gone below the frightening meter. So I've never had to have medication for it. But ever since being diagnosed with it, I have felt far more tired than I've ever felt in my life, really. But when I say anything, I get told, well, you've got a 3-year-old and a 7-year-old. Mm. So you should feel tired, you know, and my kids aren't the best sleepers. So my quality of sleep is constantly interrupted in the night. So I guess I've accepted it. And I haven't really done much investigation in it, really, except, you know, I insist that they do blood tests every 6 months and I just get told it's okay. But yeah. And then I get all these horror stories from other people saying, you know, I've had, they're on medication and the medication makes them fat and all sorts, but they've said I don't need it, but I guess I worry about it, but I've been told not to worry, but that's it. I don't really know. Cause I think it's really difficult for women because everything is so general when you go to a GP.
So just to give you a little bit of an answer to that, you can get thyroid problems after pregnancy. So quite a lot of women get borderline thyroid problems after a pregnancy. And they get told, oh, it looks okay.
Yeah.
Within the range, but it may not be optimized. So, I mean, that this is something that hormone specialists do. You know, we would always optimize the thyroid. We wouldn't just leave it if it's sort of averagely in the normal range. It's a bit like if you've got a very low iron level, but it's at the very bottom of the normal range and your hair's falling out, because iron is important for hair quality. If you put your iron level to the top of the normal range, your hair stops falling out and you feel better. But you weren't anemic necessarily. You may not have had, you know, a properly below range iron, but actually optimizing it makes a big difference. So, and with the thyroid, you can get thyroid problems that smolder on and they can start after a pregnancy and that can cause fatigue. But you can also get, I think, something that we describe as non-thyroidal illness. So if you have got a lot of stress or if you have got other health issues, that can also sort of make the thyroid not work quite as well. So there's a lot, it is difficult. And I understand that it's difficult for GPs, but GPs are expected to manage an underactive thyroid or borderline thyroid levels, and they don't really know a lot about it.
No, so it is so general for so many women, isn't it?
I mean, it's the commonest is between the ages of 40 and 60, and in women, it is the commonest thyroid problems. But that was, I actually left the NHS, having had a role for 27 years last year, because I'd see patients constantly, and I would be able to make them better. And that's amazing, but I just always realise that it's a drop in the ocean compared to how many people are out there who aren't getting that help. So one of my aims was actually to try and help more people, and to do that, I couldn't do that just being swamped in an NHS service. I thought I'm going to have to sort of step out and see how I can do that on a bigger scale. So that's what I'm intending to do, really.
And you're doing it. Your plan is going to plan, that's for sure. And it's because of the results. The one thing is, do you get a lot of men coming to you then?
I see more women than men, and that's probably reflective of the fact that men tend to not seek help. Men can get thyroid problems. Men can get problems with their testosterone production. Actually, stress suppresses testosterone in men. It also suppresses estrogen in women. So I see a lot of male patients who have, you know, hormone imbalances, you know, testosterone isn't quite right, or some of the other hormones aren't quite right, and it's trying to fix those. But these hormone imbalances, they're not diseases. They're not, not like you've got a tumor and you can chop it out. In fact, that's what modern healthcare is good at. If you've got a lump or a bump, we're very good at sort of doing a pathway to address that. But when things are just not quite right, and there might be lots of things, and a few blood tests look borderline or they look in range, then you just get told, computer says no. You know, and that's,
yeah.
I think that's wrong because that's not helping people, and lots of people are suffering.
It's more a work in progress, isn't it? Once you're on board, it is a constant for a while of just reassessing, having more blood tests. And, you know, like you say, then you get something, you know, spanner thrown in the works like COVID, you know, and you're talking the C word being cortisol.
And cortisol also, I mean, all these hormone imbalances, they affect quality of life. They're not going to kill you. They're just affecting your enjoyment of every single day. Mm-hmm. And cortisol also upsets your gut. So lots of people get gut problems, and that can stop you absorbing the very important micronutrients. So going back to Kelly, especially if you have got borderline thyroid problem, you know, and with the stress of lockdown and everything, you may not absorb vitamins and minerals. And vitamins and minerals are very important for energy. B vitamins and zinc and selenium and vitamin D that I always talk about in terms of coronavirus, they're very important for your immune system, but they're also important for things like brain function, to stop brain fog and energy levels. And that can really, you know, in terms of even stress, if you're stressed and you've got all those symptoms, it makes you more stressed.
Yeah.
And if you're stressed and you can get rid of some of those symptoms, or you're not getting the flu all the time or whatever, that can make you feel a lot better. So simple things like that can add to that whole, as you talked about the house, you know, it's like
the house of hormone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And closing the windows can get the house warm. And that's my metaphor for sort of well-being, really. So yeah, there's lots of things you can do, and it's just sort of knowing. And you know, I talk about what I do, and I see patients in clinics, but what I'd like to do is get this sort of, it's not rocket science, you know, it's really not. Mm. But if I could get GPs doing women's health management and hormone health management better, that's what I really like. So that, you know, Kelly goes to a GP and a GP goes, oh, I know what to do, rather than you've got young kids. It's difficult. I mean, I know GPs' jobs are very, very difficult, but
yeah,
I think that we're just creating more problems because, you know, a lot of people are struggling with symptoms. And
maybe things do need to change up now. I mean, it's quite significant for this year, where other major issues are popping up because of this very unusual scenario that we're in. So maybe, you know, the sort of approach to the way we're treated and what's available to us more quickly is, you know, changed up.
Yeah, I think it will. And I think already the way that appointments are delivered and things like that are changing. So hopefully we have had to do a lot of, or everybody's had to do a lot of changing in everything they do, haven't they, this year? So I think normally change happens quite slowly. And I think this, I mean, I don't want to say anything good is coming out of this year, but one thing that may come out of it is that people are going to be less resistant to changing the way we deliver, you know, certainly in healthcare.
I think particularly with women, I know from my own experience, I don't think that it's, I'm going to say sort of right from when you're pregnant, really. I think we're very lucky in this country in so many ways, the scans that we get and the kind of care compared to other countries where women have nothing and just carry on their pregnancy with no healthcare at all. So I'd hate to sound spoiled, but there's a real a lack of information for women about what comes with pregnancy for your bodies, particularly afterwards. And also the mental health. We hear more about postnatal now than we used to, but there's a whole host of things that we're not told, you know, and I've kind of banged this drum every time we ever sort of go into this territory for women and hormones and bodies and everything, because there really isn't that kind of knowledge that's given.
I agree with you. No, because as you say, they're delivering it, but they're not doing it. Mm. They haven't revamped what's needed. My mum was a midwife, and I don't think that the antenatal care and all the parent craft classes or whatever, you know, all the things that are given now, it's not much different to when she was doing it. And actually, the people are there delivering something. They just need to be sort of educated. The staff need to be educated on what they need to do for the women. And actually it's the same for pregnancy and post-pregnancy as it is for perimenopause and menopause. We need really better women's health checks. And, you know, I'm not anti the NHS. I love the NHS.
No, yes, absolutely. I'm with you. They're amazing.
But I just think that this we've had a paradigm shift, or, you know, frame shift in the way our world is and how it affects us. But the way we deliver healthcare until coronavirus came along has not changed for decades and decades and decades.
Women want to be educated, you know, and they want to know what's going on with their bodies. And you know, Jenny's mentioned this a few times. Actually, why do we wait until we hit menopause or perimenopause to find out about it? Mm. Why aren't we, you know, I'm 39, you start sort of learning now, have access to everything now, you know, because my periods are totally different now to what they were when I was 30. I've had two kids in that time.
I think it is changing, and it takes time to create a change. And of course, our mother's generation, what they experienced with the world very differently to what we experience now, and they didn't tend to talk about it, whereas we're very different now. So I think it will change for the better, but it's just, you know, trying to keep it moving.
It is so funny because I look back at my mum, and she, no offense mum, I mean she's 88, she's going strong, but she's absolutely useless. She never told me about a period, so I just went to Lou one day and went, oh mum, I've started that thing that I think my sister's got. She never told me anything about childbirth, so she didn't recommend me go to any kind of prenatal classes whatsoever. And then when it came to the menopause, I went, mum, what was yours like? Sometimes, you know, they say that, you know, you can, it can be quite similar if too much. Well, nothing happened. I don't even remember. Don't remember a thing, nothing. I was perfectly all right. It just stopped. Yes, that's it. And I was like, wow. You know, and I think that's why I crave, sort, and I always say to Kelly and with our audience that we have, you know, be informed now, be prepared, you know. It'll come by very quickly, that big 5-0 or that big 4-0, people. So, you know, it is worth trying to find the right people like yourself, and also just to educate yourself, because information is out there now, which, of course, our parents didn't have, I suppose. So it's easily accessible. You can buy your book as well.
So what's in the book? Tell us a little bit about the book. That'd be great.
The Complete Guide to the Menopause.
Yeah. So, well, it was a bit of an accident, really, the book, because I sort of decided that I wanted to improve particularly women's healthcare. And I thought, I can't do it while I'm working in, you know, swamped in the NHS. I need to sort of step back and work out how to do this. And then I got approached by a book publishing company to say, would I write a book? And I thought, well, that's a great thing. You know, I can write about menopause. I thought, that's brilliant, because, and preparing for menopause is important. And so I'm not aim. The problem, so I'm going to digress now, and I do this sometimes, but I don't want women to get to 50 and then go, oh, I'm in menopause. I'm feeling terrible. I need to sort it out. I want them to know what it's going to be and do as much as you can to keep your health as good as possible and to, you know, take any action that's needed so that you just smooth out the whole journey. And, you know, if you have the knowledge, and I went through this myself, if you have the knowledge, it's not that hard. It's just if you don't have the knowledge and it suddenly hits you like a brick wall, it's not, you know, it can take longer to get back on track. So I thought, brilliant, I can write a book and, you know, anyone can read that book. And because I am quite a holistic doctor, and because I will never apologize for the fact that there's loads you can do for yourself, but you need to know your own body and you need to understand what you know your hormones are doing at what, because menopause can happen anytime from 40. It's not even classed as premature if it's over the age of 40. So you know, it's not just hitting 50, it can happen to you at 45. And many women suffer at 45 and they don't know what it is because they think it couldn't be menopause. So anyway, I wrote it. I didn't quite know what I was letting myself in for when I wrote it. And then it was supposed to be published in July, but then obviously with the pandemic, it got delayed. So it is going to be published in January. So in the book, I talk about what menopause is. I set the scene because menopause is different for all of us and the generations that are going to go through it now compared to one or two or three generations ago, because the world is different. You know, just the 24-hour lifestyles we lead, the internet and everything, it is just incredibly different. So I talk about that. And then I basically provide a toolkit that everybody can use that will help you with all the different aspects of your life, you know, managing energy and fatigue, managing, you know, your mood and how, you know, when you get, you know, brain fog or dark moods, that can really make things worse, or you can turn it around and make it better. Weight management, exercise is obviously, actually exercise is the first chapter, because I think that is, if you've not got the exercise, it's going to be difficult to get, you know, everything else on track, because you're going to be regulating all your hormones positively with exercise. So exercise is incredibly important. I you know, I talk about sort of everything that you can do for yourself. And then I talk a little bit about employment, because I think employment's a big thing. I think I saw a lady in clinic this morning who said to me, I've been suffering from a year. I've been told I can't have HRT because I've had migraines, but I haven't had them for a long time. And so I'm giving up my job. And she was 54. Wow. And I just said, you know, I've written a book because I don't want this to happen. Yeah. You know, it's your prime of your life. You know, you should be able to enjoy your work, you know, do wonderful things. And so that shouldn't be happening. And so she'd been given quite a lot of incorrect information.
Right.
And so anyway, she's going to be fine. And I said to her, please don't give up your job yet. Yes. Just give me a chance and I'll get you there. And then you can carry.
It's interesting though, because people do get, don't they? One of my best friend's sister is 52. And I think she started sort of having it really bad when she was 50. And everybody had told her, don't have HRT. Don't have it, don't have it, don't have it. Now, she's the most positive person ever in the world. And she's a PT. She's very healthy. Anyway, she was like a different person. She was depressed. She was so low. So in the end, she ignored all these comments and she went on HRT. For her, it has worked amazing. And she is in a completely different world. You know, she's back to the bubbly person that we all knew and she's really happy. But for a long time, she was held back because of what other people were telling her, their scary stories or, you know.
So there was a couple of research, big, very big research studies done 20 years ago that said, you know, HRT is basically the devil. and they were stopped early and there was loads of publicity. And since then, there's been, you know, it's Chinese whispers, HRT is evil, it's bad, don't have it. But since then, we've seen a lot of what we call subgroup analysis. So we've looked at these data from America and from Oxford Group in the UK, you know, in huge amounts of detail. And the problem with HRT is the type of HRT. So if it's very synthetic, they used to give HRT that was made from pregnant horses' urine.
Mm.
That was, yeah. Oh. It's just basically steroids with similar effects to your hormones.
Mm. And that kind of gave it a really bad name because it was a great sort of like soundbite as well, wasn't it? You mean that horse wee? Yeah. I'm not having that. I remember all that.
I mean, it's still licensed. I don't know why, but you know, people who actually look after, you know, people who are involved in women's health don't use those hormones, but those synthetic ones. So the natural, the ones that are licensed but actually identical to what your own body produces, are, you know, basically much, much, much safer and pretty much about as safe as you can have with any treatment if given over a few years. I mean, there are data to suggest as you get older, if you're in your 60s and 70s, that it's, you know, it's quite complicated, but the effects on your heart and blood vessels can change as you get older. If you've been on HRT for 20, 30 years and you're 80, you know, unfortunately, 1 in 8 women will get breast cancer. So there seems to be a very slight increased risk in women who are given HRT for many years. But actually, you know, being overweight and not doing exercise increases your risk of breast cancer. So actually, if HRT helps you keep doing exercise,
yeah,
keeps your weight balanced, it's going to reduce your risk overall. So actually, the key is taking hormones that are the best for you and the safest for you, and they're available. Again, GPs often prescribe the cheap ones that are not as good, and that I want to lobby about that. I want to change that because I will recommend a treatment to a GP and they'll just go, well, we're not prescribing that, it's not on our formulary, and it'll be completely licensed. I mean, I don't ask anyone to prescribe anything that's dodgy, but they just will say no, we'll just give them this other one that's very synthetic.
Yeah. Do you know what's really interesting and why I really wanted you to come on here, speak to Kelly and for our listeners to hear you, is because you have a very positive attitude. You feel like you're a lobbyist, you know, you've got, you know, there's a lot to do, but you want to be part of it and you want to be there and make those changes. But also you do give people like me that feeling of it's not over. The example you've just given of that lady who was going to give up everything, I've been there. I think it was Lorraine Kelly, even she, I remember her saying, just from a sort of like from our world, she wanted to give up at one point because of menopause. I do get it. And my heart, you know, my heart pangs when I think about the women that, you know, because of an imbalance, not a sickness, but an imbalance, and because, you know, your lifestyle's not quite right, and because, you know, you just need a couple of tweaks. Don't ruin it. And don't, you know, it's almost like you know, a negativity, like I said before, that just brings us down, and our expectancy of what we do in our lives just diminishes. I think it comes from just, well, you can't have babies, you can't do anything now.
Yeah, it's confidence.
It is, and you turn it around, Denise, you really do, and you give us that positive attitude that we really all, we're crying out for it, to be honest.
Well, I want it to be, I want younger women like Kelly to say, yes, I can't wait, bring it on.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'll have more energy and I can do the things I want to do. And that's how that's how it should be, and that's how it can be. And getting the right, I don't want to put it onto doctors. I actually want to put the responsibility onto women. But for them to take the responsibility, they have to know what to do. That was, you know, one of the reasons to write my book, because it, you know, there is a lot of information in there of what you can do for yourself. But if you're struggling and you've tried to do everything for yourself, you need healthcare to support you with how to take that forward. And it's worrying. You see, you know, nowadays, just they're talking about in the government, it's all men. It's men. Where are the women going? They're just...
Where are they indeed? It's the, we had the lovely Julia Graham join us, the actress, and she's just amazing. And she uses this great phrase about the pale male stale brigade, and it stayed with me. I pull it out all the time when I'm talking about these sorts of issues, because we're surrounded by it. And it's no different in America, in the White House. It's all the same. It's all these, you know, very white privileged middle-aged men, and we are crying out for some female voices for so many issues, and health, women's health being the biggest.
If we just can improve women's health services in primary care and GP surgeries, and get women, you know, before they've crashed and burned with it hitting them and they haven't seen it coming, that sorted, we'll have, suddenly there'll be lots of women going, yeah, I can do that job. Whereas actually I suspect many women are not putting themselves forward for senior roles, because it's tough. And if you're feeling rubbish, it's, you know, you're competing against a man who doesn't go through menopause. They don't have the same. There's something called andropause, which people talk about, but that's generally much older men. They don't go through a menopause. So they've got an unfair advantage.
They have, haven't they? Yeah, absolutely.
We have women's health support so that
And also make the whole thing sexy, you know, because I think what we get sort of this tag of you're old, you know, and it's...
That's not happening.
Hormonal.
No, but I'm changing that. We're going to change all this.
We've got to, because often, you know, it's more men in power than women, and they don't find women of a certain age sexy or attractive. You know, they've used their womb. Now they're in a certain sort of league of their, well, if we don't want you, we want some young thing or whatever. We need to change that, and by having more women in power, and by changing the perception of things like the menopause. And
when we talk about menopause negatively on, you know, the internet and on social media, that doesn't help. And you know, did you see Nigella Lawson? I mean, she doesn't make me think, oh, old lady.
Exactly, with a lot more experience and a lot more should have confidence. You've run, been and gone and done it all. And, you know, you've almost like earned the latter half to make the most of all that experience and to rock it. And I'm feeling such positive vibes. I might just have to go for a run in my bikini. Oh, no, it's January.
Well, I'm buying the book in January. I can't wait to read it, Anise, you know, and start educating myself a bit more. And I might be booking you to investigate my thyroid as well, I think, in the new year.
It's a wonder. So really, to sum up, you know, we've got to take control, I think. That's exactly what you're doing, Anise. And I think we just need the tools and the knowledge. And then we can do it and crack on and get all the younger people or the younger women or the younger men or the teenagers to actually have a positive outlook on sort of the latter years or that second half of your life and look forward to it and know that, you know, there's a whole new adventure awaiting on the other side of 50. Well, thank you, Nate.
Thank you.
I'll speak to you soon.
Lovely to meet you.
All right. Take care.
Bye. Bye.